Hey, it's Diane.
Hi there, it's Whitney Hill.
Hey, Whitney, how are you, dear?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being on time.
You don't hear a lot of background noise, do you? I'm driving.
Oh, no, I don't. And
okay, good.
Not at all. We'll start in just a minute. I got an email from a couple people saying that they weren't going to be able to join today. So it might be a small group.
How many people do you normally expect for the Wednesday call?
The Wednesday group, let me look here. I'm just going to pull up the list. There are 7 people that are in the Wednesday group.
Okay, good.
Yeah, and we had, I don't even know how many we had on that Wednesday group before. We had like 9 people yesterday on the Tuesday group. It was a full house, right?
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, I forgot to record the first half of the call. So it was sort of, oh, I can't believe I did it. So everybody's listening now to you and I chat while we're, because I turned on the recording the minute I got on today. So we'll get started in just a second.
Well, you may skip through this part.
Right. Are you driving somewhere or sitting in carpool?
I travel for my job, so I'm always on the road during the day, so I'm in sales. So today I'm driving from Macon back to Atlanta.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Well, you were on time, so we can jump right in and you can kind of do a check-in. We usually start with a check-in. And so can't remember if you were on, were you on 2 Wednesdays ago or has it been before that? Yeah.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Is this your first Wednesday call? I don't know when the last time was that you've been on, but we just wanted to.
Yeah, it's been a while. The Thursday calls were so hard for me to do. So, so this has been the first one in probably 4 or 5 calls.
Great. Well, so what's been going on at your place, and what have you been working on?
My son, I have a 6-year-old boy and an 8-year-old little girl. I think it's my son that's more visibly ADHD than my daughter, that we haven't had a formal diagnosis, and it's just, you know, more the school issues and and school complaints than anything else. Like, granted, he's just in kindergarten, but it's just a constant struggle for him to stop talking and be a part of the group and pay attention, which, you know, does bleed over to home, but it's just constant talking and ignoring requests and keep talking, those kind of issues.
Yeah, and it's hard because you've got 2 of them and you want, you know, my guess is that for both of them it makes it difficult when he particularly is not kind of engaged and participating the way you'd like him to.
Right. I mean, he's a smart kid, he's interested in what he's interested in, you know, when he dials it into, but when he's, it's something that he's not, it's hard, it's so hard to get him focused and motivated and on board.
Yeah. So what have you been trying at this point?
Oh, gosh. You know, I'm trying to do a better job of making sure, checking in with him and making sure that he's, you know, not just saying request, but actually looking at him face to face and saying, okay, you know, repeat back to me what you heard. And so he hears me. And so I know we're on the same page. And that has helped some, because I think a lot of times we would just kind of just randomly say, okay, put your shoes on and grab your bag and be at the door. Well, he was already on doing other things, you know, and was focused on other things that he was wanting to focus on. So I've been trying to get him to stop and look at me and get connections doing that.
Yeah. So how? So it's on. So Jill, I see that you joined us. Hi, it's Diane and Whitney's on as well.
Hi.
It looks like we got a small group today. I got an email from about 3 people that said that they weren't going to be able to join today, and we normally have 7 in this group, so we may have even just the 2 of you. So, which is perfectly fine. It gives you guys some extra time and some extra focus. So Whitney was just sharing kind of her biggest challenge with her son, who is 6, and love that kind of getting his attention and making sure you have his full undivided attention as you're talking to him, and that can make such a difference in terms of helping him to stay focused. And I know that, I think I remember, did you buy Minimize Meltdown last summer? I can't remember, Whitney.
Say it again, I'm sorry.
Have you been, did you buy Minimize Meltdowns? Have you been using that program?
I did, and I have not done anything with that yet. And I, for my own New Year's resolution, need to schedule time where I can start working on those things.
Yeah, because it's just, you know, what you were talking in with him with the back talking, and you're doing a lot of the great thing. It's, you know, it's like we talk a lot about using the code words and doing some of those other things in terms of attention grabbing and helping him to calm down. And it sounds like you're doing a lot of the right stuff, and sometimes it's just a matter of kind of going back through the rigor of thinking through the whole process and what am I really focusing on, what am I taking aim on. And so I would encourage you today, you know, we're going to go through a little mini parenting action model and take you through the process and say, you know, what am I taking, my strategy, that sort of thing. So maybe you'll get something kind of even through this conversation today that'll help you kick back in.
That'd be great.
Sounds like you want it, you know, you're motivated to do it, but it's just a matter of getting it back on your plate.
Exactly. It's a matter, I feel like I'm starting at first step again, going, I need to go backwards and kind of start all over and kind of recommit myself and you know, start at the beginning.
Yeah, and so I don't know if you've listened to the parent manual, which is another, because it's a less of a time investment than Minimize Meltdowns is. It would be, you know, a 25 minutes of your time, but that might be another good way to kind of get motivated, is to kind of dig in and look at that again if you haven't.
Okay. No, I need to do that. Thank you.
Yeah. So, Jill, how have things been going since 2 weeks ago?
Not too bad. I think I did listen to the Minimizing Meltdown, the webinar that you had posted there.
Yeah. The Amp It Down?
What was that?
The Amp It Down?
Oh, yeah, it was the Amp It Down. I'm sorry, you're right. Amp It Down. And I found that really useful. I did forward it to my husband, but I'm not sure he had a chance to watch it yet or to listen to it. He's just been so busy lately. But I think things are going pretty well. We're really trying to work with Aubrey in not getting so triggered and so angry. The problem is that oftentimes she looks at that as, you know, like she's getting away with something. Okay, you know, they're ignoring me right here. And even though they're giving me a consequence later, I'm kind of getting away with this type of behavior. And so we haven't seen it, you know, improving or getting better, but we've noticed that, you know, we're not, you know, yelling and screaming anymore, as, you know, kind of could turn into a yelling, screaming match pretty quickly.
Yeah. So what is it that, Jill, what is it that makes you feel like she knows that she's getting away with something?
Well, I think that it's, you know, sometimes she'll make comments that, you know, like there's nothing you can do about it, or she'll give me that look like I got what I wanted. And, you know, it's hard to say. I know that she does feel like she can't control herself. And there's a line where part of it is that she's struggling with controlling herself. And part of it is that she just doesn't, she's been doing it for so long, all day long, that she doesn't want to do it at home.
Right.
And so, like, she's saying, well, I can get away with it here, and I'm going to do it because I've just had enough. And I know that you guys are going to let me. So, you know, we keep trying to tell her that you've got to step it up. And if you can do it, you know, at school, and you can do it at your friend's house, then you can do it here.
Yeah.
But, you know, and maybe she's just not ready to do it, but I think she could make some steps towards it.
Well, and so when you say it, be real specific about what is it that you want her to do.
What are the steps?
Now, what is it that you want her to do? You said she can do it at her friend's house. She can do it at school. What is it?
Well, she when she gets mad at us, she calls us names and she screams at us. She'll throw things, you know, she'll hit, stuff like that. And
so you want her to be able to manage her emotions is what you want to be able to do.
Mm-hmm. How old is she? She's 10.
Pull it together, stay calm, do whatever it is that she's able to do at school.
And
it's hard because you see that she can do it all day at school, and so you want to be able to hold her accountable to doing that, and at the same time, you know that it's got to be exhausting for her to hold it all together at school all day and that she needs an outlet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've tried giving her some, you know, outlets. You know, we actually had her make this box. You know, over the Christmas break, we got all kinds of stuff delivered here. So we would give her the, you know, the boxes, the tacky boxes, and we gave her some duct tape, and we said, here, you know, put whatever you want in there, you know, packing peanuts, and then wrap it up with duct tape, and this could be your box. And when you get mad, you could go and just, you know, punch it, or she actually took scissors to it one day and tried to stab it, but just so that when she's really mad, she could, you know, take it out on the box instead of us. And she did it once or twice, but then if we said, you know what, I think you need your box, let's go get it, and she'd get really mad. And, again, we're trying to guide her for a better way to handle her anger, but sometimes in that moment, that makes her mad, that we're, again, she feels like we're trying to control her. And then she'll just be defiant and won't cooperate.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's, you know, and it's really hard because you want her to be able to hold it together. And the reality is, I mean, I don't know your daughter, you're there 24/7. The reality is that she may not be able to hold it together all the time. And so it's about finding, you know, a safe way to let her let it out, like you were saying, whether it's punching the box or going in her room and screaming or whatever it is that's going to help her to get rid of that extra energy that she has and manage that intense emotion that she's dealing with, but to do it in a way that you feel safe, that she feels safe, that, you know, is manageable and controllable.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, I mean, most of us when we have little babies, I mean, our babies cry, and they cry a lot, and they make a huge amount of noise, and we try to get them to calm down, but sometimes they just need to cry, and they just need to get that intensity out. And as our kids mature, we hope, you know, eventually they'll outgrow that. But most of our kids are developmentally younger than their peers. And I think you guys both have that kind of elementary age kids. And so they do tend to throw tantrums and act out in a way that looks completely different than other kids their age. And it makes it really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it difficult not to judge because they don't look like their peers.
Yeah, Presto, who's 6. I mean, he has the same, to me, it just seems so, you know, unreasonable. The anger doesn't match the act of what happened. You know, if I said, no, we're not, you can't have dessert before you eat dinner. I mean, you know, and just frustration and you're the worst mommy ever. And, you know, we'll hit also. And I'm thinking, really? I mean, it just seems, it's not like I'm telling him something new. You don't have dessert before you eat dinner. It's not, it shouldn't be such a huge issue where I'm the worst mom in the whole world and it deserves to be, you know, lashed out at.
Yeah, I know, and it makes it difficult. And I think that And I don't know whether this is what you both want to take aim on, but I think that this is a really great juicy topic to tee up with our tips for today. So if you want, what we're going to do is now is kind of get really clear on what we're going to take aim on. And so, Whitney, since you were talking, tell me specifically, what is it, what's the challenge that you want to focus in on today?
Specifically, I think that it would be how to provide Preston with some, or provide me, I guess, with some talking points with him when he gets that angry or frustrated or physical when he doesn't get his way.
Okay, so the challenge area is that he gets really angry and physical when he doesn't get his way, and how is that a challenge for you?
How is it a challenge for me?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I don't feel like I have the right. I don't know how to calm him down. I don't know how to redirect him, you know, appropriately, I guess.
Because it sounds like you want him to have some other behavior besides the anger and the physical activity.
Right, right. I just, yeah. I'd like
so to... where do you go in that moment?
Sometimes I get angry back, and sometimes I ignore it and walk away. It just depends on where I'm at in my day.
Yeah. And what you really want to have happen is?
A more civilized conversation, some more understanding. Like, I mean, I guess the dessert is a decent example since it just happened. But, just, you know, if you, instead of the frustration and anger and lashing out at me, just some more understanding and acceptance, I guess.
So you want him to change his behavior and to be in a more understanding and accepting place.
Right. And also for me to have some better, I guess, verbiage to, or, action steps on how to handle him in that situation.
Yeah. So you want to know how to handle it because your goal is to get him, instead of lashing
right.
out, to a place of
exactly.
understanding. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so Jill, where do you want to take aim today?
Well, the thing that's really, really been hard on me and my husband is the verbal abuse. And she, you know, when she gets mad, she'll, you know, and she's learned all kinds of things at school. And so she likes to repeat them at home. And, you know, of course, me and my husband really responded quite a bit when she first started saying some of the things she's learned at school. She says, "You stupid idiot, I hate you, I wish you would just die," you know, all kinds of stuff like that, that we just, you know, it's really hard for us to listen to. And because she saw such a huge response in us when she started doing that, now she's using that. She thinks that makes her really powerful. And she sees that's a way to get to us because she feels like she's just, you know, so small and everyone's trying to get her to do something. And that's, you know, when she uses that kind of language at home, it gives her a sense of some kind of control over her environment. So she's been doing that a lot. And we've tried for a long time, replacement words, you know, we've told her, well, why don't you say this instead? And we've kind of tried to make it funny and rhyming and all this kind of, you know, and that hasn't worked at all because, you know, I mean, a little bit of the humor at the right time has worked a little bit with her, but when she's really triggered it, you know, you have to catch it really early on in order for that to work.
Yeah. It might sound like a funny question, but why? What is it about the verbal abuse that's so difficult for you?
That bothers us?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It
It just feels really disrespectful, and we know that it's probably going to continue to get worse. I mean, luckily, she's only in fifth grade, so she hasn't heard a lot of really bad swear words at school, but we know that, you know, most likely she will hear more, and she definitely will not hesitate to use, you know, stuff like that. And it's, you know, we have another daughter here in the house, and it's just, you know, there are things that we have some, you know, family rules that we don't call names and we don't hurt each other's feelings. That's, you know, not okay.
Yeah. So breaking a house rule, you're afraid that it's going to potentially get worse when she learns in more, you know, more challenging language, and it feels disrespectful.
Yeah, it's really hard with our older daughter because she keeps saying, you let her get away with it, you let her get away with it. And we're like, well, we're not trying to let her get away with it. We're trying to stop it. We just are having a hard time doing that, you know. We're giving her consequences. But it's still continuing. It's continued for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, you both sound pretty solid in terms of what you're going to take aim on. Let's jump in and talk about today's tip, which is curiosity. And I don't know, Jill, I know, Whitney, you're in the car. You may not have your workbook with you, but we are on session number 10. And there was a little bit of homework before that came in the Monday email, as well as some information that's in the workbook here. And I love curiosity as a tool for a couple of reasons. One is that it creates some space because a lot of times we talked last time about getting triggered. And a lot of times when we get triggered and our child does something that we don't want them to do and we feel triggered and we're like, oh, my gosh, I got to fix this. I got to change this. Coming from a place of curiosity can create some space that gives us, instead of that knee-jerk reaction, we can shift to more of a proactive response, which is less, you know, intense and often less intense and often more thought through. And then the other thing that curiosity does for us is it really does help us to get clear and to problem solve from a different place. So the place that curiosity kind of sits in the model, if we go back to the parenting action model, and that's on, you're following along in your workbook, either you're listening on the phone or those of you who are listening live, is that, you know, you identify the challenge area, you take aim, which is what we just did here, and then you educate. And being curious and coming from a place of curiosity first sits here at this level of education. So as we look at what's going on and the question we asked in the email this week is, you know, we go, what is going on? You want to look at the challenge area and say, you know, what's going on with my child's executive function in this moment? So what is it about their ADHD that's making it, that's creating this situation? So, for example, the two of you are talking about really emotionally intense kids, and one of the challenges of executive function is modulating emotion and being able to manage emotions. Our kids feel their emotions very, very, very intensely and sometimes don't know what to do with it. And so it becomes a different kind of challenge for them than a neurotypical kid. So that's the first thing to look at, is kind of what's going on with their ADHD that's impacting this situation. The other question that you can ask yourself from a curiosity perspective is, what's going on with my kid kind of underneath what's going on? And so, you know, you guys have early elementary age kids. If you had a middle school age kid, you might be looking at their hormones and their development and what's going on from that perspective and how might that be impacting the situation right now. It might be what's going on for them at school. And we talked about the fact that a lot of times our kids are so exhausted from holding it together all day long. By the time that they get home, what's really going on for them is just that they are completely exhausted and they don't have the physical strength and endurance to hold it together any longer, and so they just lose it, is often what will happen. And so it's about asking yourself some questions and coming from a place of curiosity rather than a place of, I've got to fix it, which is where we often go right away. It's the natural response, to really kind of figure out what's going on underneath it. And then when you're planning, when you do pick a response, when you do pick a strategy that you're gonna put in place, and you take action, curiosity can help you to look at if it's not working. Well, you know, why is it not working, or why did it work last time and it didn't work this time? So instead of getting frustrated or throwing the baby out with the bathwater, which is easy to do, you know, to be curious in that place and say, well, why did this work or why didn't this work, and how can I adjust and make things different to help it out? So curiosity can really play in a lot of different places here. And I think that for me, it is this logical thing to stick in the middle of a trigger. You know, so I'm triggered, my child comes home and they've forgotten to turn in their homework, or my child's yelling at me defiantly. And my natural response is, I've got to stop this. And if I can stop and take a deep breath and get curious and say, what's really going on here? And ask the question and take some space, it can give you the luxury to approach it from a different perspective. So as I say that, what kind of comes up for the two of you?
Go ahead. You know, I think it's kind of what I said before about Aubrey, is that she really feels a lack of control in her life, and so part of her behavior is trying to gain back some control.
Mm-hmm. That makes perfect sense. So if you are solving a problem, and the problem is, how do I help Aubrey feel more control in her life? How would you approach that problem?
Well, you know, we've thought a lot about this in the past, and it's, you know, giving her choices, which, you know, no matter what choices we give her, she will reject them all. And she'll come up with something, and we try to give her what her idea is more than anything. We actually try to get her to come up with some of the, you know, alternatives. But, you know, when we try to engage her in, you know, we did this class on collaborative problem solving, and she did it really well with the instructor there, but when we were at home, then she would participate just enough to kind of spoil the whole process. And she would, you know, come up with things that she knew we weren't, you know, that were really not going to work. And then, you know, when it came time to cross ideas off, she would be really upset if we crossed one of her ideas that she knew was unacceptable, you know. So it can be difficult with her, and I feel like as much as we try, she's not really putting the effort in there.
So what effort do you think she is capable of, Jill?
I don't know. I don't really know. I do see her doing it elsewhere. And so, I mean, I don't know if we just need to, you know, give it a couple more years, but we're just, it's affecting our, you know, our family so much. It's affecting my marriage and my older daughter that we just feel like, you know, another couple years of this, and it's going to be so difficult. And just the whole environment, the whole family environment is, you know, so angry and upset all the time, you know, that it's difficult.
Yeah.
And I don't
want to. Yeah, I'm sure it is.
It's
exhausting for you. It's exhausting for you. It's exhausting for your family. I can hear you saying that it's impacting every different aspect of the family. And I don't, you know, I don't know. It doesn't sound like waiting a couple of years is necessarily an okay thing for you.
No.
So if you feel like she's able to do it in some instances and not in others, what do you think that you could do that would, on some level, duplicate the experience in the areas where she is able to do it?
I don't think we can, because I think that what she really feels at home is safety, you know. I think she feels like we're still going to forgive her tomorrow, you know. Even when she acts her worst, we are not going to reject her and, you know, throw her out of the house. And I do believe she has a lot of fear about being rejected socially from her peers and her teacher. She, you know, she does surprisingly well at school. Well, she's gifted, so, but she's always managed to charm her teachers. And, you know, if they say to her, I really think you need to work harder on this, she'll do it. And so she's kind of afraid that they're going to be disappointed in her, and then, you know, maybe, you know, give her some kind of discipline, which she doesn't want to have done in front of her peers in the class. And she says
that sounds,
have any of that fear at home.
Right. So it sounds almost like it's a negative motivator. So she's afraid of rejection, and so she's behaving in a certain way.
Mm, yeah. I mean, I think all kids do that to, you know, I mean, that's just kind of, it's a big motivator to behave at school to so that you're accepted and you're not embarrassed in front of your peers and you want to please your teacher. And I think that's all pretty normal. But for her, I think she is very sensitive to being embarrassed and being shamed in front of other people. So, I mean, we try to avoid that, you know, because we know she's very sensitive to that.
Yeah, no, and I hear that. And so I'm wondering, you know, how that plays into how she feels when she is at home, because not only is she trying to hold it together, but she's trying to hold it together because she's really afraid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's hard because I know she has just a lot of anxiety. And so, you know, we make exceptions for that. And, you know, we maybe don't hold her as accountable as they would at school, but we know more of her situation. We know her better than they do at school.
So what else could you get curious about with Aubrey in this situation?
Well, I mean, I'm curious to see what could possibly motivate her to do it at home.
Mm-hmm.
With her older sister, we've always been able to find things to motivate her, and it's been very easy. And not to say her sister's an angel or anything, but when she wants something, we use that to motivate her. And she's, you know, usually it's a sleepover or, you know, like she's going to be 13 this year, and she knows that was when we told her she could get a phone. So she's motivated to get good grades because that was part of getting a phone, and she's worked really hard towards it. Anything like that, she'll work hard towards. But I think the stress and anxiety of trying to get something in that kind of a way, it's just been a barrier for Aubrey, because no matter what it is she's working for and how much she wants it, she can't seem to do what she needs to do. And we'll make it real clear to her too.
And so that kind of goes back to the expectations and what's realistic. And I think what a lot of parents will do is they'll put the reward at the end point, which is, I want you to never be disrespectful. And if you're ever disrespectful, then you lose the reward. And an alternative, if I can.
We've always done it. For her, you know, we're like an hour. We're happy with an hour because that's really all she can do. And she does go an hour sometimes without giving,
right,
you know, verbal abuse. And then when we go to praise her for that, she gets really mad. You don't have to say it. You know, it's funny. But, yeah, you know, we've tried to put it real small and give her smaller rewards in the meantime. They're kind of working towards the big thing so that all along, you know, she'll – but she's never really been able to get to the big reward. So it's been –
Well, and that may be where the maturity comes in. And so that's the piece of it is that, you know, it may just be that she is capable of holding it together for an hour a day. And maybe then it becomes an hour and 10 minutes, or maybe then it becomes an hour and 15 minutes, or, you know, whatever it is, and you're adding on to her. But I think that what I would encourage you to do is to figure out what she is reasonably capable of doing when she's home, because it's clear that she's able to do some things differently at home than she is at school. Find the motivators that, you know, that help her to be that way, and then figure out kind of what your response is and can be that's going to help her when she does lose it. You know, so there's two pieces of it. It's like, you know, rewarding her for keeping holding it together and then figuring out how to best manage it when she does lose it. And so that's where some of the stuff in the minimized meltdowns can come in terms of looking at, you know, is it prevention? Is it management? Do I let the meltdown happen? Do I walk away? Do I stand there? You know, what's the best solution in that moment that's going to help me stay calm, that's going to help my child stay calm, and is going to move the situation forward instead of getting us stuck in, this is not okay that you're melting down right now or that you're yelling at me right now. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Whitney, what comes up for you as we talk about curiosity?
I think I just need to ask more questions, you know, and maybe, the, you know, out of that frustration sometimes with Preston, that, you know, to ask what's really going on sometimes and say, you know, what's making you so angry, or can you tell me a little bit more about, you know, you being frustrated, or, and sometimes he'll just flat out tell me, Mom, you're not listening to me. And even if I know the answer is going to be no to whatever he's trying to rationalize me to get or buy or do, sometimes I think that he just wants to be heard, but I'm so quick to want to get to the answer because the answer is still going to be no. But I think in his mind, sometimes he doesn't feel like I'm listening to him.
Mm-hmm. It sounds a little bit that, that reminds me of what Jill was just saying about control and how he's trying to gain some kind of control in a disappointing situation.
Right. Yeah.
So
I mean,
if you know, funny. I have the same with my older daughter, is that she'll ask me a question and I'll say, you know, she'll ask if she could do something and I'll say no. And then she'll want to go on and on trying to convince me of a yes. And I'll say,
exactly,
I just said no.
Right.
And then she'll get so mad for not listening. And, you know, and sometimes I feel I should listen. And other times I feel like, you know, I'm not going to change my answer. And then she's like, but you don't listen to me. And, you know, at some point I should listen to her, but sometimes I also feel like she could go on and on and on because she's,
right,
like, you know, a little lawyer. I mean, she could come up with all kinds of reasons why I need to say yes.
Right.
And so we talked about humor. I don't know if you've listened to any of the old calls, but I think we've talked about humor a couple times through the process this year. And that can be a great way to you know, bring in some humor, is to say, okay, I'm going to get the timer, and you get to be the lawyer for 5 minutes, and you get to tell me all the reasons you think that I should do what you want me to do. And it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to change my mind, but I want to give you voice. I want to let you feel like you've been heard, and, you know, maybe they get their briefcase out and they get up there and they, you know, they make their presentation and that sort of thing. And then you do the same thing and you share why. But I think sometimes our kids just want to be heard. And so it's, And it's hard because we're exhausted and we're tired and we know the answer is going to be no. But if we can find a way to help them to feel like at least they've been heard, sometimes it makes no a little easier.
Right. Mm-hmm. But then it is kind of, it can be frustrating because it sometimes no just needs to be no. It's like you want to listen, but then also there's going to be times in the day or times in as they're growing up. I mean, sometimes no just means no, and they need to accept it and move on. I don't need to sit there and you know, like you said, it can go on forever. So it's,
yeah.
I don't know if by giving them, is he going to expect that every time? Like, okay, where's my soapbox? Because I want you to listen to me.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So you're going to try to figure out what your boundaries are and what's going to work when, and there's going to be times that you don't have time for the soapbox. And there's going to be time to do. And what, as you were saying that, it was making me think about the code word. There's a code word that Elaine uses, and she talked about it in that Amp It Down audio, I think, Jill, that you were saying you listened to, which is when you're going to tell your child something they don't want to hear. You know, so you get them ready because they don't like it. One of her kids has a really difficult time with the word no. And so they have a code word that they use, and I think it's bubblegum. And so whenever mom says bubblegum, it's kind of like, get ready, I'm going to say no, and you need to be ready for it because you know that you have a difficult time with the word no, but I'm sorry, but that's what I'm going to have to say. So it's kind of a way of easing it in and figuring out how to say no in a way that they can hear differently.
Mm-hmm. It's a good idea.
Because what happens from a biological perspective, I mean, this is the reality of it, is that they get triggered. And this is what we talked about 2 weeks ago. Jill, you were on there, but it's like all of a sudden their hormones are flooding their body because they're in threat mode. And it's like, no, you can't say no. And they lose complete access to the problem-solving part of their brain. Even if the problem-solving part of their brain is small, which it is because they're young and they have ADHD, so they have, you know, a different level of executive function than we do as adults, whether we're ADHD or not. But they literally don't have access to that part of their brain. And so it becomes about finding a way just to get them to be calm and getting them to stay, you know, if they are not calm, don't try to solve the problem. The problem is now about being calm. You know, so everything, we drop the disrespect, we drop the, you know, the argument about this, we drop the argument about that. It literally is, how do we focus on calming you down right now so that you can re-engage in the conversation? And so that might be something that you could both get curious about is that, you know, what is it that helps your child to calm down when they do get triggered by the word no or by, you know, a situation, that sort of thing.
Yeah, mine likes to read. Oftentimes she'll want, you know, to play on the computer or something like that. And for me, I kind of prefer her to do something like drawing or reading. She loves to read, and so that often will help. Or, you know, just playing with Play-Doh or something like that. But, and I've been able to get her to do something like that. You know, why don't you go and draw for a little bit or go pet the cat, and then we'll talk about this in a little bit. And she'll go off. Sometimes I can get her to do that. And then later when I want to bring it back up, you know, when I want to say, you know, now listen, I really can't have you calling me a stupid idiot, you know. Something like that, you know, what can we do to stop that, and, you know, what are we going to do about that? And she's calmed down, and then I bring that back up again. She's like, I'm not talking about this, and she'll leave, and she won't engage. And so then I'm kind of stuck with, okay, you know, I did let her calm down. I told her it wasn't okay, but she's not really willing to talk about it, even when she is calm.
Yeah, yeah, and that can be difficult because you want her to be able to reengage. And so, you know, I'm wondering, I remember she's 10, right? You know, so it's like,
yeah.
how do you hold her accountable to reengage and honor the fact that it's really difficult for her to do that?
You know, sometimes we'll tell her, like, you know, if you don't want to talk about it now, that's fine, but
you don't have your computer privileged until we've talked about it, you know, something like that. And it's worked occasionally, you know, then she'll be like, fine, let's just get it so over with now so I can go on the computer. And so she's been able to kind of talk about it, but again, she's, you know, more, it's like her goal is to satisfy us so she could get to her computer, and so she's not really, really thinking about it or planning on using any of those things. And so that's...
Well, and I guess, yeah, and that makes it difficult because the reality is that it may not be realistic for her to meet your expectations in terms of how she's handling the situation. So she may not be able to say, yeah, I get it. Yeah, I'm sorry for it. I commit to doing something different. I mean, it's about baby steps, and it's hard for us as adults to sit in and kind of even figure out what's going on in their head in that moment, but would encourage you to kind of continue to look for those times that she does do it and celebrate like heck. You know, so even if she does go, yeah, I'll do it, let's get it over with, I want my computer time, and she's honoring her commitment, which is, I'm going to talk about it, even in her own little way.
Mm-hmm.
So how does it feel when I say that?
It's pretty accurate. I think that, you know, I do feel like if she could do it, she would do it. And it's hard. I think we probably are pushing her to do more than she can do. It's hard to accept that, you know, that she really, a lot of times, is more like a 5 or 6 year old than a 10 year old. And because she's so smart in other areas, you know.
Yeah, and
so,
it's hard to see that, isn't it? Because they are mature. They're mature in many ways. Some of them are very old souls. I like that language. But it's like, and they're very bright. And so you don't want to see them as being developmentally delayed or developmentally immature. But the reality is that they are.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to find an expectation that's realistic. And it's hard to do.
Uh-huh. I was trying to come up with other ideas than just, you know, thinking about what would work for him, for Preston to, he's not a reader yet, he's what would help him calm down in those situations. And what they do at school is, he definitely has time out at school, but he also has a sit-out. And in his mind, it's obviously not as bad as a timeout, but when he gets really amped up and is, working his way towards doing something that is unacceptable, they depress me to maybe need to go sit out for a time. But, you know, just coming up with other choices just then, you know, separating him from us, from the situation, and, you know, putting him in a room for a sit-out, timeout, whatever it is. But, you know, what else do you do with him?
Well, and I think, you know, as you were talking, I was remembering a conversation I had with a parent, a client, and it was, is there a way to kind of create a checklist for them? So, you know, when he's not upset, come up with a list of 5 things that he can do that help him to calm down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's, you know, sitting with a teddy bear and reading a book, or reading a story with mom, or doing some jumping jacks, or if he's got a punching bag, or, you know, whatever it is that helps him to calm down and to shift some of that energy. And then he's got his list, and he knows that he has 5 options. And so if job number 1 is to stay calm for you, job number 2 is to help him to calm down, you know, help him to say, okay, what, you know, maybe you put it all in a box and it's like, go get your calm box and pick something out of it, you know, or whatever the language is, but, you know, help him to go and say, okay, I need to calm down right now. What are my tools that I have to calm down? And if you have a standard set of things that he can go to, it makes it easier than, oh my gosh, I got to calm down. I don't even know how to calm down because I'm so upset right now.
Does that make sense? Yes.
you know, an idea that I had, it doesn't really work for my daughter because it actually worked a little bit for my older daughter when she was younger, is we got one of those, like dart boards. It was a magnetic one. Mm-hmm. And she loved to play with that. And so we would say, go throw some darts. And she happened to be really good at it, so it wouldn't frustrate her, and it calmed her down. My younger daughter is not so talented at hitting it, so then she'd just get more mad when she couldn't hit the target, you know. But even a basketball or something like that, if they're good at that sort of thing, sometimes that helps them calm down because they have to focus and
work
really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's just started to get into these electricity kits where they're putting together circuits and putting together things to make something work. So maybe working on one of those projects would be a good idea.
Yeah. Because like you said, I mean, sometimes separating your kids from you even can make them more upset. I know that I'm very aware that some kids do not like to be alone, and it sometimes makes them even more panicky and more upset to be isolated than it does have them be together. And so if the goal is really, how do I help you calm down and not how do I punish you, you solve the problem a little bit differently, I think.
That makes sense, too.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on curiosity, on emotional intensity? It's been a good conversation.
I can't think of anything.
You know, the thing that I go back to with emotional intensity that I'll just share with both of you, because this is what you were taking aim on, is that I always draw a box on a piece of paper and like with a four square, and it's one side I write prevention, one side I write management, one side I write my child, and one side I write me. You know, and so it's really, there are really four different areas of focus in handling a meltdown. So is it about preventing preventing the meltdown, or is it about managing a meltdown that's already happening? Is it about doing something with me, or is it about doing something with my child? So if I know that my child has a particular trigger around, bedtime, for example, you know, so do I put some prevention mechanisms in place to make it easier so that as we're getting close to bedtime, we're easing into that so that there's not this shock that tends to trigger and causes the challenges? Or is it about the calming, which would be a management for my child? Management for me might be, I know that if I'm really upset, I've got to go take a time out. And I think that's what Lori DePauw was talking about in the video we talked about. It's like she's got the spot in her house where she would go and take a time out because she needed to calm down so that she could parent. Or is it about knowing what your own triggers are and being able to manage from that perspective? So, you know, looking at it from helping you and helping your child from prevention and management can be a really good way to kind of even just start to go, okay, what do I want to do? And then asking the question, what about this is okay and what about it isn't? And so sometimes we do let our kids go, and sometimes we do let them yell and get rid of the extra energy because that's the most effective thing in that moment. And it doesn't feel good, but it may also be, you know, if your child had Tourette's syndrome, you know, and they yelled and they said terrible things, at some point you would go, you know, this is just their Tourette's syndrome, and I've got to figure out a way to create some boundaries around it so that I know and I feel okay about it. And I'm not suggesting that you completely accept or understand when your child's being disrespectful and rude, but it's about understanding what is realistic for them and what they need to evolve and grow into as they get older.
I had a nurse tell me one time that with her son, who was, I think, you know, fourth, fifth, middle school age, just was so frustrated from keeping it together at school all day and had all this emotional energy after school that every day he would come home and take a bag of ice and just take it and break it up on the sidewalk, which is banging on the sidewalk. And that helped him get out that extra energy. And I said, you know, just the as needed. And he was, nope, it was an everyday thing. Like, it was just one of those things that seemed to really help him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that that's what happens, that our kids get home from school and they're exhausted, but they've also got a lot of pent-up energy. And so getting curious, I'm going to take us back to that, getting curious and saying, what is really going on underneath this? Why is my child, you know, why is my child acting out right now? Well, my child might be acting out because they feel like they don't have any control in their life and they're trying to gain some control. It may be because they're exhausted and they need some space to be by themselves. It may be that they've got so much energy they need to have an outlet, and maybe going for a bike ride or going for a run is the right solution. But it's, if you can get to a place of curiosity and out of that, oh my gosh, this has to stop, I have to fix this mode, it gives you space to have more solutions and more problem solving. So we're going to close up by looking at our questions, and we ask the same questions every week. If you're following along in the manual, we are on page 25. So first question is, what did you learn or get clear about today? How can you apply this to your life right now? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how can I set myself up for success? So think about that for just a minute. And if you guys want to share, we'd love to hear what your takeaways were and what your action steps and intentions are for the next couple weeks.
Since I'm not looking at it, can you tell it to me again, and I'll answer them as you say them.
Okay. So, what did you learn or get clear about today?
Just thinking about being curious and finding other ways of problem solving and other ways of helping certain situations when I'm dealing with him being angry, and finding out maybe what's the cause.
And how can you apply it to your life right now?
I'm sure I will have an opportunity to try this evening when there's a disagreement between, whether it's a dinner time disagreement or bedtime is always an ongoing battle. So hopefully I'll have a chance to work with them tonight on that.
Yeah. So specifically, what action are you going to take?
I think I'm really going to try the, when he's, instead of just immediately saying no, just to kind of give him his soapbox for a minute and say, I like that. Here's your timer, and you've got 30 seconds to. I'm going to listen. You tell me why you think that you should be able to do X, Y, or Z, and answer may not be, No. I mean, yes or no, but I'll listen to them for it.
And what do you need to do to set yourself up for success?
Be patient. Be patient and in the moment, and really give myself some time to think about, and not react, and to really use these tools that I'm learning in the moment.
Yeah. And sometimes it's hard to do because sometimes we're tired and we're exhausted. And it's about knowing when it's realistic to try a tool and when it's not. Because there are some days that it's like, the last thing I should be doing is practicing that new tool today because I'm just too tired or whatever it is.
Right.
So can I share something, Whitney, about about managing the word no in your household?
Sure.
Because I have the same challenge because, I have kids that don't like the word no either. And I long ago made the commitment to be a mom that would try to say yes no matter what. That's my goal. My goal is to find the yes. And I talked about the fact that that's the kind of mom that I wanted to be, and I always would try to, and I would remind them of that, and I would, say yes as much as I could and really listen and that sort of thing. And I think that it just was this subtle difference that when I did say no, it sounded different because they began to believe that I really was always committed to trying to say yes if I could, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so actually it does make sense.
I've tried sometimes to phrase things differently, like, if, you know, if we're, can we go to the park? Yes, but, you know, not right now, or yes, you know, at another time. Sometimes that works. Sometimes they can read between the lines and say, okay, but you're not, my needs aren't getting met right this very second. But that is a fantastic reminder. Thank you.
Yeah. Great. Jill, what about you? What are you taking away this week?
Well, I think I really got clear on that. I probably am just expecting too much from Aubrey, and that I need to kind of cut back my expectations a little bit and to make it a smaller goal, a smaller, more manageable goal for her, and, you know, be happy with that. And you know, try that for a while and see if she can make it there. And I think if we can maybe do some more baby steps. I was talking to my husband last night about the fact that we hadn't, in the last month, we haven't had what we call a major meltdown. She has meltdowns every day, but we, for a while there, we were having these meltdowns about once every 2 weeks where she would break something, or she would, you know, it would get, you know, pretty bad where we almost needed to restrain her. And we haven't had anything like that for a month. So, I mean, as much as she still had a lot of bad behavior, we have to look at that as a plus, you know.
Yeah,
has it
that's
broken
quite
anything?
A celebration. Go for a whole month like that. That's a huge step. And I think that's the piece that what ends up happening is, you know, and I think about our kids and they're climbing up a set of stairs. And, you know, and we stand in it and their peers are on the top step and they're somewhere on the stairs heading up to the top step. And so what we do is we go up to the top step and we say, get up here. And we try to drag them up to the top step. You know, it's like, you should be here. Instead of going down, if we had a toddler and we're helping them get up the steps, we'd go down to the step that they were on and we'd encourage them to get to the next step and then the next step and then the next step. And it sounds like if you look backwards at where she was at and maybe she was breaking something once a day or, you know, once a week or whatever else and you haven't had that happen in a month, there's progress going on and that's real progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that the progress is really what me and my husband are doing to kind of de-escalate. When we see things, you know, getting really out of hand, that we just disengage and, you know, walk away because we know it's going to get ugly if we don't. And that's made a big difference. And I think she's kind of trusting now that, you know, once she gets at, you know, pushes us to a certain point, we're going to stop and we're going to just leave the situation. I think she's starting to trust that that's what's going to happen. Instead of keep trying for a long time, she just keep trying to get us so mad, you know.
Yeah. Well, so keep trying, keep celebrating the progress. I think that that's the one thing that I find counts more than anything else. If you can focus on what's working and not what's broken, it gives you more energy to focus on what's broken.
Mm-hmm.
So, you guys are doing great work. Keep it up. Our next session is in 2 weeks on the, what is 2 weeks? February 5th. Wow, we're going to be in February already in 2 weeks. That's crazy. And our topic is going to be, do I know what it is? Perspective, which is a great, great, great conversation. These are all great, fun conversations. Hopefully you enjoyed Curiosity today. I'm curious how everybody listening on the phone thinks about it and would love to see some comments on Facebook if you're willing to share how things go. And good job today, ladies.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Have a great week.
Thanks. Take care.